Wait, are you are you gonna count me in? Whatever, I'm just gonna go for it.
Welcome to the Queen's Lead Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Singleton. And as a child of the 80s, I'd love to say queens rule, but they don't. Queens lead. Being a queen means you are worthy to be a leader of people. The guests on our show do exactly that. They are leading the way in their businesses, families, and communities. And they're taking their rightful place in the spotlight, leading and inspiring the developing queens in all of us. Welcome to the Queens Lead Podcast.
Now here's your host, Amy Singleton, the queen of realness, leading conversations about business, life, and the real shit you want to know.
Welcome to another episode of the Queen's Lead Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Singleton, and today we are joined by Lorraine Ball. Nice to see you, Lorraine, and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Please tell everybody, let me just tell them. Her bio says, she said goodbye to glass ceilings and bad coffee by spending so much time in corporate America. So tell us who you are and what you're all about, Lorraine, today.
About every 20 years, I reinvent myself. I think that's a good thing. But right now, I was a recovering corporate exec, started my own business, built that for 20 years, sold it. And now I am a podcaster and a marketing educator. I'm teaching at a university. I've got some consulting clients where I get to do the fun part of marketing, telling other people what to do without having to do any of the work. Yes.
I've had so many people come to me and say, you should be a coach for this. And I'm like, I don't want to be a coach. I just want to boss people around and tell them what to do. That's totally different.
It is. And I like that. I've always been bossy.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm bossy. So what kind of corporate work were you doing? Corporate marketing?
Oh yeah. I was, my last job, I was running creative services for a large insurance company. And I had what was essentially a marketing team inside a corporation. I had 48 people on my team. I had designers, I had writers, I had editors, print production. And if that sounds excessive, it was.
It is a lot, which is one
of the reasons that particular company went bankrupt, because it was a little excessive. But before that, I had done channel marketing, I did brand management, I did product marketing. So I kind of had an opportunity to play in a lot of areas. And when I left my last corporate gig, I thought, you know what? Where I was most successful was when I had an opportunity to do some entrepreneurial things. We actually sold our services like we were an agency to the larger Indianapolis community. Wow. And we were making money. And as the company was sliding into bankruptcy, we were making a profit. And I kind of looked at it and went, you know what? I know how to do this. And if these people will get out of my way and they wouldn't, I went, you know what? It's okay. I can do this on my own. And that's what I did.
That's awesome. And then so that's where Round Peg was born?
Round Peg, yes. If you want to sum up my corporate career, I was always the round peg in the square hole or the square peg that they were trying to get to fit in that neat little round hole. And I always had corners that didn't fit. And so when I created my own business, I decided I would create a place that I fit. And it was things that I liked doing and things that I was good at. And then it became about creating solutions that fit for clients.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And so how long you had that company for 20 years?
19 years. Yeah. And then finally got the right offer and it was the right time. And I thought, okay, I have built something that someone else will value and they will write me a check for it. So I think this is a good time to do this.
It's a good time. And when was that you sold?
3 years ago this month.
Wow. What timing.
It was perfect. You know, a lot of people said, well, did you do it because of the pandemic? And I was like, no, we were doing fine. It wasn't my favorite year. Okay, let's
yeah, for sure.
2020 was not my favorite year, but we were okay. But coming out of that, looking at what did I want to do going forward, had this offer, really thought, well, this will free me up to do more of the teaching and training that I love, maybe write a little bit and continue to do the podcast, which I've always enjoyed.
And your podcast is called More Than a Few Words.
More Than a Few Words.
What's that about?
Well, my mother said I was born talking.
My mom said the same thing about me.
Yeah, you know, I kind of got
that. We haven't shut up since.
No, no. That I always had enough words for any situation. And I started the podcast kind of on a whim 14 years ago.
Wow.
And really have just really enjoyed it. It's gone through a lot of iterations. Today they are 10-minute conversations because my audience is primarily early stage companies, small business owners, entrepreneurs, solopreneurs who do not have time to sit down for a long episode. Mm-hmm. And so these little marketing bites are just enough to give them quick tips, ideas, resources that they can consume while they're waiting for their next meeting, while they're in line at a coffee shop and get on with the rest of their day.
I love that. That's awesome. That's so great. And 14 years ago on a whim, I mean, 14 years ago, a podcast was not exactly what was at the forefront of most people's minds, right?
No, no. And you know, it's funny. And it's something I've always done. I had a really sharp intern who said, you know what, this is what you're good at. You're wired for this. And I went, okay, let's give it a shot. And you know, we had some bumps in the road. Oh my God, we had a live call-in show because we were treating it like a radio program.
Okay, yeah.
Live call-in shows are not a good idea. Live shows are not a good idea. Call-ins are not a good idea. Putting the two together, oh my gosh. We let go of it pretty quickly.
But imagine some of the questions you got on that call-in show.
But I'll tell you the one thing I miss, of course, it's really not possible anymore. We had a live Twitter feed. And so I had one of my team, they were live tweeting while we were talking. And so we could be engaging not only with the guest, but with the Twitter audience. Now, podcasting has changed. Twitter, sadly, has changed. That still breaks my heart because I used to love Twitter and I clearly don't.
So you were doing Facebook Lives basically before there was a Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That's awesome. an audio version because we weren't doing the video with it back then.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's so incredible. What a trailblazer you've been in this whole arena. So going back to Round Peg, when you started that, and this is not typically what's in the forefront of most business owners' minds when they're starting a business, but talk to us about why a business owner might want to begin their business with selling and having an exit plan in mind.
So full confession, this is not how I started my business. I had to run the catch up along the way. But in that experience, what I realized was when you start looking at your business as an asset, not an extension of you personally, it's easier to make the tough decisions. It's easier to decide that this is a bad customer fit, or this is not a great product, or that's not a good customer. And it's not personal. It is a business decision. That's not a profitable relationship. Now, I don't want you to take the heart out of it completely because that's what makes it you and yours, but it allows you to step back. But the second thing that it does is you start thinking about documenting your processes. You start getting some structure because you're like, well, if somebody else is going to buy this and I'm not going to be the one doing it, how are they going to know what to do?
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about documenting those processes is even if you don't sell for 20 years, your business gets better because you're paying attention to the processes.
Yeah.
You're simplifying, you're streamlining, you're thinking about the most efficient ways because again, you're looking at it through the lens of if someone else is going to do this.
Yeah.
And then my favorite part is then you can start stepping away. Back in, I started in 2002 and I probably did not take a vacation, a real, you know, more than a day here, day there until 2010. I mean, there were years because I was just head down. And then I had an opportunity and I was going to be gone 2.5 weeks and I was freaking out. And then I just did. And everyone on my team cheered me. They're like, we know what to do. We've got these processes. And once I did it that first time, then that became an every year thing. And then it became a twice a year thing because it was good for me. It was good for my team. Yeah. And I did not have to worry because the processes were in place. And when it came time to sell the business and the new owners were evaluating the company, they're like, well, what do we do when you step away? I said, exactly what you do while I'm here. Mm-hmm. I don't do any of these things. This is all done by my team.
Right.
By that point, the only thing I was doing was balancing the books and I was selling.
Yeah. Yeah. So back then, were there, I'm assuming there probably weren't a lot of these apps that make it really easy to document processes anymore. Were you using like a 3-ring binder and writing things down? Like how were you doing it back then before a lot of people were thinking about the way we do it today?
So
before Salesforce, you know, I mean,
before Salesforce and before all these apps, spreadsheets were my friend. And we actually had one spreadsheet. And this was something I had learned from when I was in corporate because we were using a software product to help us track all of our literature and production stuff. I actually took the process from the corporate environment and I overlaid it on the agency. And it was way too big and there was way too many steps. Mm-hmm. But starting with that and then trimming out what I didn't need and what I wasn't going to use, I had a nice sort of first step.
Yeah.
And I had a spreadsheet that had every project I did with a number assigned so that I owned the company 19 years. I had someone call me and say, hey, 11 years ago, you did a brochure for us. And I said, yeah, I did. I'll be happy to get you. Are you looking for a copy of it? They said, yes, please. And it would take 5 minutes.
Wow.
First thing was that even if I wasn't there, if the phone rang and someone said, hey, you don't know me, but Lorraine did this for me. And they're like, okay, so what was your name? Blah, blah, blah. And they could look it up.
Yeah.
And find it and find the original files.
Wow.
And, it started with a lot of paper files.
Yeah, I bet.
That was weird when we finally threw all those away. I was like,
you're like, I know it's been scanned in, but I want my papers. That's me. Like, I want to keep my papers. I don't know. That's hard.
I know, but boxes and boxes and boxes. And we remodeled and we got rid of the storage closet. And so it was either get rid of the boxes or bring them home. And my husband was standing at the door of the house going, no. They're not coming in.
I love it.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. Okay. So you obviously sold for a lovely amount and a happy, 20-year business resulted in something really great for you. What is something that another business owner could do to make their business more attractive to a buyer? Other than, of course, those documented processes.
Documenting the processes. Part of what made us attractive was our retainer clients. Mm-hmm. A lot of business owners get into this situation where every project is a start over. And the more long-term relationships you have with those customers and the more reoccurring revenue you have, whether it's from a subscription or a retainer relationship, that adds value because now someone looks at it and they're like, oh, I'm not just buying your brand reputation. I'm buying revenue streams. Mm-hmm. But, and here's the caveat, and this is really hard as an owner. You build these relationships. Now you want to sell. And so I started several years before. I had somebody who talked to me about the business. I decided I didn't want to sell to them, but it got me kind of switching my head a little bit.
Yeah.
Every one of my clients, although I had a relationship with them, they had an account manager. They had a relationship. Yeah. So when I sold the business and the new owners were like, well, what about the relationships? I said, it's not a problem. If it's a web client, they love Simon. He's going to handle them. They never even talk to me. If it's a content client, they're going to miss me a little bit, but they got Sam. And I got to tell you, Sam's their guy. Now, you have to take care of Simon and Sam. I mean, that was the thing. But if you do that, the clients will be fine. And so that's the two people. Got to think about reoccurring revenue streams, whether people are subscribing or just you do work for them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Even if you're a coach or a consultant, you got to productize some portion of your business that people pay for on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Because that has value.
That's right. And knowing that lifetime value of those clients is something that every, you know, any M&A expert is going to ask, you know, what's the lifetime value of your clients? Well, if you're getting fired every time you sell a new thing to a new client, they don't want to hear that. They want to hear that you have that recurring revenue, that mailbox money that continues to come in. That's kind of more on autopilot.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, for a lot of agencies, there is a portion that has to come in every month. And this is where the sales portion of the process really becomes important. You do need new web clients every month.
Yeah.
But if you can document that you have a process that you move people through, that you can show a potential buyer, look, we do this, and then we do this, and then we do this, and this is our closing rate. And then we do the work. And then this is the number of clients that stay with us afterwards. Yeah. So you have that event sale that you have to keep making.
Yeah.
But you've got to be able to show that some of them stay with you beyond that.
That's right. And not just documenting your processes, but I'm shocked all the time to talk to business owners that don't have any kind of CRM or aren't keeping their customer information, or like to know, like, what is that churn rate? Do you know how many of your clients actually leave once they sign up? If you're not documenting processes and having data in your business, you can just imagine you're going to take it with you to your grave, because no one's going to want to buy that business.
No, you got to know. Now COVID changed everything.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I could do a pop-up seminar. I could host 8 to 10 people. I could put one or two of my existing clients in the room. And I knew originally it was 6 in, 1 client out. Then it became 8 in, 1 client out. And now it's harder because people don't want to come to live events. They're like, no, I'll just watch the video. And the conversion rate is not the same.
Yeah.
And, but you had to know what your conversion rate was to know where it is now, to figure out what's different. What do you have to do differently?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Everything has changed 100%. Mm-hmm. So even if someone's not ready to sell, when is the right time? Like, even if a lot of people that listen to this podcast are like your audience, small, you know, solopreneurs just starting out, thinking about starting out, what is the value of doing that? Even if you're not thinking about selling right away.
Your business will make more money if you have process in place.
That's right.
Period. Yeah. It does not matter whether you sell tomorrow, 10 years from now, 25 years from now. Give it to your kids and let them continue to run it.
Yeah.
Businesses with good processes will make more money.
Yeah.
Adopting a strategy of reoccurring revenue of staying in touch with clients, of having a process to reconnect with clients 2, 3, and 4 years after you've worked with them.
Yeah.
You will make more money.
That's right.
And doing these things and creating a business that can run without you will allow you to reclaim part of your life so you don't go 8 years without a real vacation. So whether this is, I'm making up for it.
Good.
I am making up for it. There have been more than a few plane tickets around the world for me these days.
Yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up. So outside of not taking a vacation for 8 years and not documenting processes early enough, what were some of those early mistakes that you made early on, or some wisdom that you could share with us from those early days in the agency?
So the thing I did not do early on that I finally got into, you need to think about your business a little bit like a manufacturing company. Okay. You need to know where your capacity is. And this plays into, when do you hire that next person? And in a manufacturing company, you want to get as close to the maximum capacity as you can. Because if you go over in manufacturing, you have to add a line, you have to add a shift. And now you've got to sell so much more
back
down to profit level. Yeah. So you got to know what your capacity is. You got to know how much can you actually do with the team that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to get close to that place where, you know what, we can handle 5 websites a month, whatever your number is.
Yeah.
Wow. We just sold 6. Do we hire somebody? No. Raise your damn price.
That's right.
And yeah. I mean, if you're getting close, and that was something I did not do early on, where I kept hiring the person and keeping the pricing the same. And finally, one day I went, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Stopped doing that, stopped adding staff, and said, no, instead of having 25 customers, I'm going to have 20 customers who pay me more. So I'm generating the same amount of revenue, and I'm doing it with the staff that I have. And now we're making more money. I can pay my staff more. You know what? They will stay longer. When your team stays longer, yes, you end up paying more. You can hire a new college grad for you can't do it for $12 an hour anymore. you can do it for $15 or $20. And yes, that's cheaper than that employee.
Yeah.
But that learning curve, those relationships that they have built with your customers, that has a value.
That's right.
And finding creative ways to keep the team in place is really important.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Oh man, that's so good. So the podcast, you're now it's just the podcast. And who do you bring on as guests, and how often are these episodes released? Where can we find it? I need to know all about it. For 14 years. That's a long time.
So More Than a Few Words is available wherever you listen to podcasts by now. Every time there's a new podcast network, I'm there. Well, you're going to be a guest. We've got you scheduled for a recording session coming up, and I'm excited to reverse the order and put you in the guest seat. What the show is about, you're getting a chance to network with me when you listen to the podcast. You're getting a chance to meet the people I'm meeting who are excited about marketing, who are passionate about small business. And we chat, and you only get a little snippet, because a 10-minute conversation goes really fast. But you'd be amazed at how much ground we can cover in those 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. The new episodes are once a week. I also do a marketing minute, which is just me sort of ranting on Sunday mornings about whatever pops into my head.
Love it.
Then every now and then, if I have a lot of guests stacked up, you might get an extra episode during the week. Or I've got 950 episodes. There's a lot of great content in my library that people will never find unless I re-release it, yeah. which I started doing last year and reconnecting with old guests and re-releasing it. And it's just so much fun because they are, they're great conversations. These are interesting people.
Yeah.
And I did something else really fun last year. I'm going to do it again this year. I released a collection of essays written by some of my guests. And you can find a link to the book. It's called More Than a Few Written Words.
Nice.
And you can find that on the More Than a Few Words website. And it was just another way to tap into the expertise of these people that I was talking to and meeting, and people that I think my community should get to know.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. We should do a Queen's Lead book.
Yes.
It's Queen's quote or something. I don't know. I like this.
I like the idea. I'll tell you, it was not nearly as tough as I thought it was going to be. The hardest thing is we're all busy and we're all like, Oh, I'll write a chapter for you. And you're like, hello? Want to go
over here? That's right.
But it was a really good experience. And what was fun was a lot of my authors got to know each other.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm telling you, networking.
Networking, just networking in a new way. Not the way you were networking back in 2002 or prior in the corporate world, I'm sure.
No. And when I started the business, I was on a mission to make a lot of friends, and I did an awful lot of rubber chicken and stale Danish and business cards and made a lot of great friends. But I'm into this now as well.
Yeah. I do a lot of handshaking, a lot of catering eating. I like this way as well. It's great. I get to meet a lot more people from all over the world, You are in Indiana. Is that right?
Indiana. Yeah.
From there originally?
Oh, hell no.
That's great.
No, I was born in New York, lived in Texas for a while, and came up here on a 3-year contract, and 30 years later, I'm still here.
Oh my gosh. Must be a great place to live.
You know, it's really nice. It's, you find your people and you find your community, and because it's so affordable, it's also affordable to travel.
Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. I love that. That's one great thing about Oklahoma. It's pretty affordable to live here. So
yes, yeah. I've driven through Oklahoma. I really like Eastern Oklahoma because it's green. I'm not a big fan of the West Texas, Western Oklahoma landscape.
Yeah.
It's just not my, I know prairies are pretty, just not to me.
Yeah, no, they're dusty and flat. And Eastern Oklahoma is beautiful. A lot of beautiful hills and mountains and green stuff over there.
Now, where are
you? Arkansas. I'm right in the middle, Oklahoma City.
Okay, so kind of, so you can get to both. Yeah.
Right, for sure. Yeah. I've been accused of being, accused. I say accused. I don't know why I say that, accused. But a lot of people think I'm from back east.
Because you do not have, a lot of the Texas, Oklahoma, Southern sound.
Right. Yeah. I definitely spent a lot of time in speech and debate and drama and choir and trying to weed that out of myself. But I do find when I'm around my family again, sometimes I slip back into that like accent, you know?
Oh yeah. I can do my best Fran Drescher. This is how I sounded. You know, the girl from Flushing, Queens. Yeah, that was me.
Oh my God, I love it.
much like you, I discovered that the rest of the world maybe doesn't appreciate or value that particular sound.
Right? They think we're dumb. Like when they hear you're like, a lot of people from other places will think that Oklahomans are stupid because we sound like hicks, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And yes. I totally get it. It's so interesting because wherever you're from, you don't really hear the accent,
right?
It's the rest of the world that talks funny.
Yeah, exactly.
As you move around the country, you're like, no, man, you all talk funny.
I know. I feel so bad for any immigrants coming here that want to move, that move from somewhere like New York to Texas or to Louisiana and back. They're not going to know. They're going to have to learn the language like 10 times.
Yes. Yeah. And it is different.
Very, very different. Lorraine, what are you excited about coming up? You sold your company a few years ago. You're traveling more. You're doing the podcast. Is there anything new? Something different?
I'm teaching at a university, one class, just to kind of keep, to sort of force me to stay a little bit on the bleeding edge, kind of find out what's going on. And I am having a blast. It is so much fun to connect to that next generation. And while a lot of my students are more corporate, think they're going to be more corporate oriented, I get a few that popped up last semester that are entrepreneurial. And I'm like, okay, this is fun. And I'm working on a second essay collection. And then I'm doing just enough consulting to, again, stay connected, work with customers and clients that I really want to spend time with. And it's fun.
That's so much fun. Yep. And you're going where?
I said, and I'm going to Savannah tomorrow. So.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
That'll be beautiful. Have you been, I'm assuming, before?
No, this is one of it's always been on my wish list. And I'm rereading the Garden of Good and Evil, because that's what you have to do before you go to Savannah.
Nice. That'll be a blast. Oh my gosh, how fun. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us. You're incredible. I'm really so happy that we connected. I'm excited to be on your podcast as well. So tell folks where they can, well, I know we can find your podcast anywhere, but if they want to connect with you personally, where's the best place to do that?
I think the best place to connect with me is on LinkedIn. That's where I'm hanging out. I'm on the other social platforms, but a lot of them are really more for social. And so I tend to ignore the business connections a little bit there. But LinkedIn, I have great conversations and I love meeting new people. Awesome. And can I pitch the offer? Is that okay?
Please. Oh, yes, absolutely. Tell us about the free effort. Completely forgot. She has something for us and I almost let her away without telling us about it. Please do.
So the Digital Toolbox is a collection of all of my training materials. There are 8 or 9 different online courses. There's probably 70 different just quick shot videos. There's worksheets and checklists. And as a special offer for you guys, I have created a code that will allow you to bypass the $299 annual or lifetime membership fee and get full access to everything for free. And I assume you'll just put the link in the show notes, right?
Wow, for free?
For free, yes.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Yes, we will put that link in the show notes. I think it's the code is Queen's Lead is the code. And let me just grab, where's it at? It's over at digitaltoolbox.club. So you'll head over there. We'll put the exact full URL in there and then you can go over and head and grab that toolbox for $2.99 normally or completely free.
Yes,
wow. Thank you.
It's a lifetime membership. And I just, I'm at a place where I just really want people to access the information. You've got a great audience. You have a great show and it's a nice way to connect.
Thank you. That will be very helpful to my guests. So go over, grab that free toolbox, guys. You've got lifetime access to it. Check out the worksheets, all of the videos, everything she's got there for you. It'll help you move your business forward. I promise you. Lorraine knows a thing or two about growing and selling a business. So she's kind of been there, done that. So she knows what's up. Thank you, Lorraine, for being my guest. And thank you for being a queen that leads.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
The Queen's Lead podcast is recorded worldwide and produced by the kick-ass media team at the Height Digital home base in Nicaragua. Until our next episode, stay real, queens, and go lead. Remember to tap that follow and leave your review. For freebies and more real, inspiring content you love, go to amysingleton.net and connect with Amy on our socials at The Real Amy Singleton.
One more thing. This is the legal language, what my lawyer wrote and what I need to read to you.
This podcast is presented for educational and entertainment purposes only. I am Amy Singleton, and I'm just your friend. Although I may speak to many on this show, I am not a psychotherapist, a business coach, a doctor, a CPA, a lawyer, or probably anyone who should be giving you professional advice. This podcast is not a substitute for a relationship with your doctor, coach, or any other licensed professional. Got it? Good. Now go be a queen and follow me at The Real Amy Singleton.